Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolte.
And you have been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives, presented to the public as a dramatic, hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you are all clear to know the truth, and there was a lot of truth to be told this week.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and several times in a different way.
That's correct. So, what are we going to be investigating this week, Josh?
So it's up to me to tell them this. You couldn't do it because you can't even give some time with your banking job requiring you to travel from the States from Tuesday to Saturday every other week. No, you couldn't find any time to write some show notes here. Just your work and your prostitutes. That's all, huh?
Prostitutes.
Well,
plural?
One and a half.
Yeah. Oh. That's like a Mike Peterson prostitute, right? It's just like,
all right. Yes.
Anyway, all right. What's our episode tonight?
We are going to be talking about episode 13 from season 1, Tracks, or T-R-A-C-K-S. I think we just go with
I think
tracks.
It is T-R-A-C-K-S, because there are periods all over. And what does there that mean to you?
It means someone really wanted to spell tracks.
Yeah, exactly. Very good.
So, this episode aired on February 4th of 2014, and it was written by Lauren LaFranc and Raphael Judkins.
It might be Rafe.
Rafe, okay, well, we were going the French, Italianish kind of thing.
Oh,
we are in Europe. This was a European-type episode.
Very true. And the director is very European-sounding as well.
Paul Edwards. Paul Edwards, yes. Yes, so let me run this one down for you real quick here before we talk about all the goodness. On a train trip through the Italian countryside, which in no way looks like Southern California, Coulson's team makes tracks to follow a mystery package that is making its way toward Ian Quinn. And as the team separates on their individual adventures, Skye is wounded as Mike Peterson gets a leg up from the mysterious clairvoyant.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, there was, they promised a lot, and I think they delivered this week. It was a very exciting episode. And now the show is going to be off for 3 weeks until March 4th. What?
Oh. Well, they even had a cliffhanger, and they're going to be off?
That's the only time they seem to do cliffhangers is when they're going to be off.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm kind of bummed about that because I feel like they were teasing so many different things, in press releases online and stuff like that. And then, they went away for a winter break. They came back for 2 episodes. They went away for 2 weeks. They came back to do 1 week. Now they're going away for 3 weeks to come back. As far as we know, only one episode, right? I'm assuming they're going to do a couple in a row, but who knows? But we can enjoy ourselves with the Olympics in the meantime, I guess.
I will do that. I like the Olympics.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm gonna miss this because it really was kind of an exciting kind of episode, and I really would like to know what happens. I wasn't a huge fan of the way it ended, but I would like to know kind of what's going on next.
Yeah, well, I mean, and obviously that's the point, to try to entice people to come back. I'm just kind of surprised that they are just taking such a long break, but that's probably something that's slightly out of their control. I'm sure they just don't want to go up against the Olympics because the ratings are already dropping enough that I'm sure that would put them even lower or something like that. So
Now, have you heard? Are they going to play any reruns, or are they going to show old episodes from this?
I don't know. I had actually. That's a good point. I had not looked ahead on TV Guide. I just knew that from the little teaser at the end of the episode, they said they would be back on March 4th. So
okay, all right.
They may be doing reruns over the next three Tuesdays, but I don't know. I don't know if maybe they're going to put something else on. So I don't know. But speaking of sporting events that, you know, are occurring, there was a relatively big one this last weekend.
And, there was.
There was a not specific S.H.I.E.L.D. Commercial in it, but there was a trailer for Captain America 2, Captain America the Winter Soldier, which will feature S.H.I.E.L.D. quite a bit. Had you had a chance to see the trailer?
Well, the deal was the trailer was... scheduled to be on during the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
So I was planning on watching it and enjoying that commercial in the midst of all the football goodness I was going to enjoy. Living in Denver here, I didn't really make it that far, mm-hmm. So I missed the commercial during the Super Bowl. But I did go back and watch it. I watched it later on. I watched the trailer after that. So
good man.
Yeah.
I'm glad you could lift your chin up off the ground to take a few minutes to watch the trailer.
Sometimes you need a little extra support to get yourself through these times. So, I had a chance to watch it, and the trailer was very exciting. So if the movie's half as exciting as the trailer was, this is going to be fantastic.
I'm. No! Fantastic. That's a different movie. So this is.
My apologies. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't think they can talk
about
that. Either.
They don't have the rights to that one.
Right.
Sorry.
Right. But I'm very much looking forward to this, and just the things that we see about S.H.I.E.L.D. in this, and there was a digital comic that came out that was a prequel to The Winter Soldier, which dealt with S.H.I.E.L.D. specifically. Again, not anybody from our crew, mm-hmm. but Captain America and another S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, I guess, that's going to be in the movie. Just a little prequel to kind of set the theme or the tone, I guess, for the film. And I'm really interested to see. I'm hoping that they will interweave Captain America 2 and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. over a couple episodes. It sounds like with the characters that they're bringing into S.H.I.E.L.D. over the next few episodes, that they might possibly be, you know, leading up to a parallel sort of event as to whatever happens in Captain America 2, because it looks like S.H.I.E.L.D. is S.H.I.E.L.D. has some problems, basically. So I'd like to see the combination of the two franchises here.
It feels like they're even kind of getting that vibe that they have a problem within S.H.I.E.L.D. in the show, too. At least it hasn't in the last couple episodes, but we got a little bit of that, I suppose, before Christmas when Coulson was having his issues.
With Victoria Hand. Definitely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to say, I mean, I think we'll talk about this a little bit tonight, but there's some elements of that going on with Coulson right now, the way Coulson relates to S.H.I.E.L.D. And again, it wasn't primarily in this episode. It was more back on the Magical Place episode where he found out about himself. But, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. is, you know, they keep secrets from themselves as well, or from their own. And that can be detrimental to the morale of the individuals that are working for them, you know, just like, I mean, you know, secrets can damage people and stuff like that. And that seems kind of what Captain America's theme is as well. So,
yeah, well, I would like to see, in the movie especially, but, in the show, I think it'd be great if there was some interaction between Captain America and Coulson. I almost think you really need kind of that, you know, if not closure, which I hope it wouldn't be, but just that connection that they had, you know, to tie the bond together that they got in the Avengers. I think that would be nice, but
yeah, I mean, cause, Coulson is, you know, he's a huge Captain America fanboy. So yeah, that'd be great if he, had a cameo in there. Now with all the other stuff we've been hearing about, Captain America, the Winter Soldier, I have not heard about any cameos from actors on the TV series, but
I have not either. That's just something I would hope.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I would love to see that as well. And right. I saw that there are some rumors about what the closing credit sequence is, which I don't want to even get into that right here. So
no. Well, as far as Captain America 2 goes, I am actually looking more forward to Captain America 2 than maybe any other Marvel movie coming out this year.
Since there's only two, that's
well, or anytime soon. Yes, but I mean the as you know that you know I didn't grow up a Marvel fan. I'm kind of new to this universe as far as following it so closely and enjoying it very much. But I really like that the Captain America 2 movie is a sequel yet feels so different from the first one. Right. And you don't really get that with many movies that have sequels. But, Iron Man, had very similar feeling and very similar themes to it. And, the Avengers movie, I think, is probably going to have a similar thing with just, a big threat to the Earth. You get the idea. But yeah, it's in a different time setting, obviously, and it's kind of have a different idea if it's more of him against the government, or at least that's what we think. So anyway, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, and there is you also mentioned the Avengers sequel, Avengers Age of Ultron, which we want to get to S.H.I.E.L.D. here, but I'm sure there's going to be some S.H.I.E.L.D. elements in that movie as well. I'm assuming that Black Widow and Hawkeye will be in that. And we just got word today, it's not official because it hasn't been announced from Marvel Entertainment, but the very likely rumor is that we will, in fact, be seeing the Vision in Avengers 2, Age of Ultron. And the one reason I wanted to bring that up is because I know there's been a lot of rumors about the S.H.I.E.L.D. series and that, when we were talking about Coulson potentially being an LMD and all this kind of stuff, people were like, he could become the Vision. Well, that's not going to happen. It's Coulson is Coulson, and the Vision will be a separate character. So if you're interested in finding out a little bit more about that, just Google Avengers Age of Ultron Vision, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of news over the next few days about that. So had you? I don't know if you had even heard that or not, but...
I had heard that very recently, and I heard that maybe Paul Bettany was possibly going to play the Vision. Paul Bettany, he was the only thing I really had known him from was the voice of Jarvis,
right?
But also did a
comic adaptation of a series called. Well, maybe it wasn't a comic adaptation. Anyway, he was in a movie called Priest, which was kind of a post-apocalyptic film.
I have never seen that, but I know which one you're talking about, yeah.
He played Chaucer in Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger, also who played the Joker, which that was... I love that film. That's just it's kind of a cheeseball knights, kind of a King Arthur kind of story, and not really King Arthur, but about this boy who has nothing and grows up to become a knight, and Paul Bettany is the announcer for him and is drunken and very very robust throughout the film. So yeah, he's done a whole bunch of other I think he's done some BBC shows as well, so but yeah, you're right, he is the voice of Jarvis on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So but anyway, some cool things that we can probably see associated with S.H.I.E.L.D. here coming up very soon. So maybe there'll be some other rumors and some other news coming out in the next few weeks to keep everybody entertained until they come back on March 4th. And then we will be back following the next episode to I don't even know the name of the next. Oh, I do know the name of the next.
I do, so, yes.
Yeah, I saw it. It is a sequel to The Magical Place, I guess, because it is called Tahiti.
Yep, that's it.
Am I right?
Yep, that's what I heard too. I don't know. I'm actually really curious about that just based on the title.
Yeah.
Find out a little bit more information about his background maybe.
Well, and we'll definitely get into discussing some elements of what, not necessarily what Tahiti means in terms of the title of the next episode, but where I think potentially the plot line may be going here. I got to say, they seem to be telegraphing their punches a little too much. I am not, you know, after the whole reveal of what is Coulson, you know, now we've kind of been set on a certain path. I'm not making wild speculations anymore. I'm kind of looking at stuff and going, oh, okay, well, maybe what's happening is this. And then that's what happens. Unlike other shows that I watch, like Arrow, which I say, oh, I bet this is going to happen. And they completely do something entirely different that's even cooler than the idea that I came up with. I feel like Marvel's kind of just telegraphing, or the, you know, the showrunners on this show are kind of telegraphing stuff. But let's get into that. Why don't we go ahead and just start talking about the show here? So first off, I wanted to find out what does TRACKS, T-R-A-C-K-S, stand for? I mean, it to me sounds like they just wanted it to spell TRACKS, like we joked about. It's on a train, right? So trains run on tracks, so that makes sense there. But why put all the periods in it? Is that just kind of a convention, do you think, of the show? Because they call them, the show is called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and there are periods in between S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, short answer, yes. I do think that's why. But I think they also probably came up with something that it stood for.
They haven't told us, though.
No, they haven't told us. They haven't told. Maybe they just have, like, an app on their title keyboard computer that just now, so they don't have to do that every time they put S.H.I.E.L.D., and it just randomly puts the periods, in other words. But, No, they didn't tell us what it stood for. So, what do you think? What do you think it could stand for?
I got a couple ideas here. So, okay. Traumatic reveal, activated cyborg, kills Sky. Though he didn't really kill Sky because it was the other dude, but there was no...
You could put a question mark at the end of that one.
Oh, yes, a question mark.
All periods except for after the S, maybe.
Yes, that's good. How about this one? Terribly realistic Agent Coulson kidnaps Stasis Chamber? I thought that was a pretty good one.
I like that one. Okay, number one so far.
Oh, that's number one? Okay, all right, wait, I got one more here. Let's see about this. Terrorist rebels assemble creepy killer supervillain.
Okay, that one's good too. I think I'm going to go with the terribly realistic Agent Coulson kidnaps Stasis Chamber. I like the terribly realistic Agent Coulson idea. That's
right, because I mean, you know, is he really? You know, we still don't know. Is he really Agent Coulson? Really? So,
anyway. I bet they have a department in S.H.I.E.L.D. that just comes up with, you know, acronyms for things.
The acronym department.
Yes. Department. They probably have a better acronym than AD. All right.
Scusi, attenzione, signore, signori. As we round the bend, the passengers on the north side of the train can take in the views of the famous Tre Cimi del Lavaredo. Isn't it a wonder?
Okay, so one of the things they did in this episode was they used this kind of multi-point of view format. It's very, you familiar with the Akira Kurosawa film Rashomon?
Uh-huh.
I found this to be very much like Rashomon, where you would see part of, you'd see something happening, and then we go to commercial, and then you come back, and then we start over, or at least we pick a point to start over from, but we follow a different group of characters on this. So my question is, was this clever for them to do, or was this a money-saving device so that they could just reuse footage and, you know, really only give us, like, 36 minutes of show instead of 42 minutes of show?
I don't I'd like to say I don't think that's why they did it. I don't think that's why. I mean, I don't think it would just be to save money. I think maybe they were just looking for a way to tell each of the characters' stories on the team. Mm-hmm. In a little bit different way. So you knew, I mean, they were all separated and but they each had an interesting story to tell. So I think they were trying to looking for a way to do that, which I thought is pretty, it was a pretty good way to do it in this case. You would never want to overdo it. Matter of fact, you'd probably never want to actually do it in this series ever again.
I can agree with that. I felt that, there were a couple parts where I felt they set it up in a certain way at the beginning, but then it's like the time didn't exactly match for what happened, because I think the first thing that we saw was Coulson and Simmons in the car when the announcement was made, and the guys come in, and she spills
the ashes.
The grandmother on the floor, and my wife was like, "Oh my god, he walked through it." I'm like, "That's okay. It's supposed to. He's supposed to. It's the tracking powder." She's like, "That's gross." That's not really grandma, I don't think. Unless it's
you don't think that was some villain they had captured, that S.H.I.E.L.D. had captured, or and they were storing them in a.
I was going to say it was just an acronym. Safe. It was GRANDMA, which stands for some one of the A's is ashes or something like that, you know. But and I felt that, you know, that was a longer sequence than some of the other sequences that we saw, and maybe I'm just, you know, maybe that's not correct, because I think they did them all in between the same, you know, in between two commercials, so it was all kind of the same time span that we were getting for them. But it was interesting. It was, you know, when we first saw the train vanish, it's like, oh, wow, how are they going to explain this? And I thought, you know, again, they kind of seemed to psych me out. They were doing a little, oh, are we doing something kind of mystical? No. It's just it's a fake out, which, you know, it's like, yeah, it's interesting. But once I saw the purple, like the purple lines, I guess, around Coulson's eyes in the second part when May finds them, I'm like,
right.
Oh, it's like the stuff on the Night-Night gun. It just makes him be asleep, which,
right.
Of course, was what it was the dendrotoxin, so.
Yeah, I that's about the time I knew, too, but it didn't bother me. After I saw that, I'm like, oh, that's what happened. Although yeah. I think they could have probably, maybe used that idea a few more times where it seemed like things were disappearing before they actually revealed it. But it didn't bother me or anything.
If they had done one more with it or something like that with from Simmons' POV or something like that, potentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we need to know that it was safe when Simmons got hit with the grenade so that we weren't afraid that she was going to die again.
Well, that would have been, yeah, I suppose. Yeah, either way, like I said, that one wouldn't have bothered me. But
yeah.
Do you remember a movie back in the 80s called Looker? It had, I think it was Albert Finney. It was about a gun that, you know, kind of did that same thing where it where you shot it, and if somebody saw it from their eyes, you know, you could cover your eyes and not be affected, but right. And it would like make you freeze like that for a little bit. That's what this reminded me of. I don't know.
I hadn't even put that together. I remember the film, but I wasn't thinking about that during the episode. So.
I think that must have been one of those HBO movies that they would rerun over and over and over. So I saw it a lot of times.
HBO a lot. Yeah, they showed that, and it was a sci-fi film from, I want to say, 82, 83, something like that. So
sounds about right. Well, I like the idea that they're using a weapon like this that's different, you know, and where you don't have to have quite so much killing in a show like this, but
sure.
and it's just something, and it gives kind of a different twist to it where you can do things like this where you're kind of wondering what's going on or what's going to happen next. So I like that, although I'm not sure why the villains would use a weapon that didn't, you know, kill. But
well, yeah, and it brings up an interesting point, like why are they using a weapon that just disables instead of killing, other than the fact that it's our heroes, you know, that they're going after.
Mm-hmm.
It also points out something I think we talked about a couple episodes ago, which is the fact that the bad guys, whoever they're going up against, the clairvoyant and his group, which, again, I'm assuming is the Centipede group. I'm still kind of a little unclear on where this all, you know, what's the hierarchy? I need an org chart, please. But, you know, they seem to have similar technology to what S.H.I.E.L.D. has, but it's light years ahead. Or not light years, but, you know, more advanced, 20 years advanced or something like that. They've got a dendrotoxin very much like the Night-Night gun, but they've aerosol release, and it's something that, you know, Fitz and Simmons are like, wow, this is pretty advanced. So
they're working on an inhaler for it, too, so a little asthma thing, you know.
Scusi, attenzione, signore, signori. As we round the bend, the passengers on the north side of the train can take in the views of the famous Tre Cimi del Laredo. Isn't it a wonder?
So what do you think about the jokes in this episode? They keep spicing the shows up with, you know, little bits of humor here from the characters and everything. How did that sit?
this one felt perfect to me. It was it was balanced. just the right amount of humor. Spaced out real well, and it kind of fit the scenario. It didn't feel so out of place as as it has occasionally in this in the series. It wasn't too I'm not sure how I'd use to describe it. It's not really in your face or anything like that. I don't know that it's ever been quite like that, but I don't know. It was just more clever, I think. Simmons' bad cover story, you know, that she was talking to Agent Coulson.
Right. With your lovely rendition at the beginning of the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I sounded just like her, didn't I?
Yeah.
And it was perfect for the character. You know,
yes.
I mean, she just that over-attention to detail, and that's anyway. So that was really good. I also liked real close to that, there was another one I had here, but Fitz's interaction with Skye and their American accent.
He did a great job. I thought that was really nice. You know, it's funny because you always see these British actors. They can do a really good American accent, but you can never get Americans doing really good British accents, it seems like.
I think you're right, actually. I don't know. It always sounds better to me than I think it does from people that are actually, you know, from the United Kingdom. They probably like, that's not good at all. he was perfect in my ears. He's not really American, that actor, is he? I don't really know anything about him.
I'm pretty sure he's actually Scottish.
Okay. Well,
Scotch.
He does a pretty good darn American. I don't know that. I didn't know people with English accents could do that. I mean, they could never do anything like, I don't know, Superman or something like that. So.
Right, right. Or Batman, you know.
No way.
horrible.
So I also liked so when they were separate, when Ward and Coulson were separated from everybody and they were back on the bus, and he was trying to figure out the little holotable there.
That was my favorite sequence in the entire episode from a comedy standpoint, I think. It reminded me, very much of Star Trek IV, Save the Whales, where Scotty is trying to interface with a 1984 computer, you know, by talking to the mouse. Hello, computer. And it also reminded me of the scene in the original Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi one, where Peter's trying to get his web shooters to work. And he's like,
oh, yeah,
go web. and he's, you know, putting his hands in different positions trying to get the web to spray out of his wrists and stuff like that. So, and then of course, yeah, Coulson comes in and Coulson's like, oh, I could never figure out how to turn it on. He's like, yep, there's a power switch right here. Like, yeah, I know exactly how to turn it on, even though he had just figured it out. So,
yeah, that made it good too, because he came in all serious, like Ward should have known what he was doing, and then he revealed him his own ignorance. But I'm going to guess right now that that Agent Ward is the owner of an iPhone.
Why is that?
Well, because the first thing he tried was just kind of, you know, the pinch thing.
Oh, the pinch.
You know,
yes.
And strange, you know, as he's looking at that, I actually thought of doing the same thing. I'm like, I just, you know, kind of spread it apart, you know. That's just
right,
like your iPhone.
And then Coulson just and makes it all stretched out and messed up. So that was pretty
good.
Now, the one part of me, like the comic book fanboy part of me says, oh, this was cool. And another part of me, the more critical part, says, this was really cheesy. And it was Stan Lee's cameo.
Ah, Master Lee.
Which I think I want to say it was a good use of him in a cameo, because it's more than we've gotten in other medias. You know, it wasn't necessarily integral to the plot or anything like that, but it, you know, it helped move the characters and stuff along a little bit right there. But he's not a good actor at all. I apologize, Mr. Lee. I love reading your stuff. But actually, he acts very much like he writes his characters. I mean, he was very big and bombastic and kind of over the top, I guess. which just stood out.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. It felt a little out of place. And I almost think that they could have done something, like could have put him somewhere else. There was a few opportunities on the train that they probably could have just had him even just sitting there, but I guess they really wanted him to say something, but
yeah.
I don't know. You're right. He can't act.
Yeah.
But you know, it worked. At least it gave him an opportunity to use Simmons' little clever story there to get that sort of, you know, discomfort when somebody heard her talking about it. So
right.
So it was all right, but I agree with you. That was right, probably the least favorite of my comedy scenes.
Yeah, and that's why I say, you know, because it helped advance that part of the storyline with the characters, and, you know, for anyone else around that, you know, it was making their backstory believable by having him, you know, reacting to the fiction of their cover story, basically. So, anyway, I thought that was, out of all of the kind of the humorous moments, and I think those are probably most of them. Though I think also when Fitz shot the guy, like after he was already asleep from the grenade, and then he shot him two more times with a night-night gun just to make sure that he'd be out for a while, that got quite a chuckle in my house.
Scusi, attenzione, signore, signori. As we round the bend, the passengers on the north side of the train can take in the views of the famous Tre Cimi del Lavaredo. Isn't it a wonder?
All right, so I want to take an opportunity now to talk about the end of the episode. They went a different direction than I thought they were going to here, and I do applaud them for taking it as far as they did, but I also, again, have some criticism about the way they dealt with it, because it was pretty harsh. So Skye has become a relatively well-liked character, right? You'd agree with that?
I mean among the team or
among
like viewers?
Well, probably both, I think.
Okay, yeah, I've heard kind of both sides of Skye. Although I think that people have started to come around a little bit on her. I have. I think she's a good character.
I agree. I mean, I think there were some times when she's been annoying, but I thought she's been well written over the last couple episodes.
Yeah,
and then to have first off, I thought she was really idiotic. I mean, there's a guy with a gun, and you know this revived friend of yours just wanders off, and you don't go after him. You stay there with the guy with the gun, so he shoots you, which was bad. And then the fact that Quinn pulls her up close and he puts the gun like right into her belly and shoots her again. I mean that's cold, man. And like you said, he's got his orders as well, but. I was concerned that they were going to have her pull out of it, or that, you know, Simmons was going to fix her or something at the end of this episode, or that because of previous episodes we were going to find out that, you know, she has some kind of superpower, which I think is still going to be the case. But I thought they were going to deal with it all in this episode. So I thought it was kind of a bold move for them to use that as the cliffhanger. Like, is she actually going to survive?
I do like that part of it. All of what you said was, except for, you know, her not leaving. Just the way she was kind of almost threatening to what's his name? Ian Quinn, yeah. I guess not that people wouldn't do that. Maybe if you're nervous in the kind of the heat of the situation, you might kind of get bold and say stuff like that. But all of that was fine. I had no problem with that. It's kind of what happened after she got shot that I was a little disappointed in.
What? How so?
Well, I just okay. So they come up and find her. Great, you know they're going to get to her and everything. I actually had a little Walking Dead vibe to it, but they conveniently are in the room where this stasis chamber, I guess, is, which again, no big deal because that's where Mike Peterson was, right? But she just puts her in there and she's okay.
Well, yeah, of course, because when you turn on the extra pressure, it doesn't cause the blood to squirt out or, you know. I mean, she's got a freaking hole in her belly and no one's thought
two.
To, like, well, two, yeah. No one's thought to put any kind of pressure on that. Right. Yeah, it just begs the question because of things they talked about in the previous episode where she was the 084, the object of unknown origin, which could just mean it could be something as simple as we just don't know who her parents were. But I think they had mentioned the fact that this child, this 084, which we believe to be Sky, had powers, even though the one agent never saw what they were. So it begs the question, it's like, okay, what kind of powers does she have? I mean, is she got like some kind of mutant healing ability, like Wolverine, that's going to kick in here? Does she have mental powers that allow her to be able to inhabit somebody else's body until they can fix hers or something like that? I don't, you know.
Hmm. Yeah, knows? And to me it just felt like there were so many other things they could have done. You know, this stasis chamber thing could have been described completely differently, you know? I mean, where something that really could have stabilized her somehow, or you know, Fitz and Simmons could have come up with some way to stop the bleeding and then, you know, put her in this thing, which would be like kind of like putting her in a coma, you know. I mean, there was just a lot of different ways they could have gone, but just here, get her up in this tube and we'll pressurize. Oh, okay, good. All right, we're good. All right, so let's go get a drink, then we'll work on her. I don't know.
The dialogue that was taking place there, it felt a little forced. May, you know, asks if she's okay, and then it's followed by Coulson kind of like screaming, like, "Is she okay?" And I'm like, dude, calm down. And I'm like, you're the leader and you're in charge of this team. But, you know, I think maybe that's part of the reason why they did that. I mean, Coulson obviously is attached to her. Quinn knows about this because why? Because the clairvoyant knows this stuff. I'm getting to the point where I am disliking this tactic because it's kind of that Deus Ex Machina, where you've got, you know, it's like, oh, why does the character have this special ability or this weapon that is completely useless? It's like, why are they carrying a spoon with them the entire time? Ah, well, that's because at the end they need a spoon to escape the, you know, the villain or something like that. So that's why they've had the spoon, because the writer decided they needed a spoon at the end, so they put a spoon at the beginning of the episode, and they keep doing stuff like that. It's like, oh, well, the clairvoyant knows this. It's like, well, of course the clairvoyant knows that because they're clairvoyant. But it's kind of I feel like it's getting to be kind of sloppy plotting.
Yeah, a little bit. And I was okay up to that point. I mean, hey, here's a simple solution. She's shot. She's bleeding. Get her back to the bus.
Right.
Just get her back to the bus and do what you can right there. I mean, maybe they have some sort of wound stabilizer or something. I mean, all of it all would have made more sense to me than just slapping her in this tube and then being all upset and crying over her like the seven dwarves, you know? So,
well, but, you know, again, I think they are leading up to a revelation / plot piece here where Coulson is going to be put in the same position as Nick Fury was in the Avengers. I mean, and it seems blatantly obvious to me that that's kind of what they're going for.
Oh, so okay. So he's going to have to make a decision,
right,
about Sky.
If he doesn't do that, I'll be kind of surprised. But yeah, he's got this attachment. Quinn talked about his attachment. You know, what would happen if we killed Sky? You know, Coulson's pet project, all this kind of stuff. And then he shoots her. Because I think the clairvoyant wants to see what will happen. Maybe they will utilize some of this technology again, and then the clairvoyant will then have an opportunity to either A, find out what they did, because right, he still doesn't know really what happened with Coulson, or sorry, the clairvoyant, not a he, just the clairvoyant. And so maybe they'll have an opportunity to figure out with, if they do the same thing to Sky, you know, use this brain picker to rework her, and you know, will Coulson move heaven and earth to bring her back?
Hmm.
And the fact that the next episode is called Tahiti, it's like, you know.
Ooh, okay. I see where you're going. I see where you're going. Interesting.
It's almost too blatant.
I suppose. I don't mind. I don't mind. You know, connections, bookends, where you kind of repeat themes and ideas. You know.
Oh no, I don't either. But, I just want them to be. I guess I want to feel more organic, like, or just keep going and then surprise me with that. And then when I go back and see it a second time, it kind of becomes obvious. It just feels, you know, it's obvious, I guess. And it's forced, maybe. I don't know. Or too foreshadowed.
Right now I'm feeling, and maybe after the next episode, and these two things tie together as one longer story. Mm-hmm. Maybe it won't feel like that. Whatever ends up happening to her, I hope. I mean, that's because, like I said, that for both of us, that was kind of the weakest point of the whole episode. So,
though I did, and not to say I didn't feel some emotion there. It was shocking. I was surprised that she got shot, and I'm like, okay, she got shot, and then she got shot again. So it was like, wow. Okay, all right. No, see, the show's still got like 8 minutes. They're gonna patch her up, but they don't patch her up, and I'm like, wow. Okay, so that part of it is like, that's surprising. That is, you know, that's interesting to me, the fact that they went with that sort of thing. It's like, could they really kill her off? Well, I guess it's totally possible. It seems unlikely in the first season to kill off pretty much the audience identified character that you started the series with. Right, I think she was like the first or second character we saw in the entire series. So, I don't know. But, yeah, I think they could have worked it just a little bit better. Now, there's a conversation between Ward and May after that. Once they get, they finally get her back to the bus. And Ward and May have a little conversation. Ward's really upset. He's punching the car. And May's like, you know, it's okay. You know, you don't have to blame yourself. And he says, I don't blame myself. Now, to me, I understood him to mean that he was blaming somebody else. My son seemed to think he was blaming Ian Quinn, which I thought was an interesting idea. Of course, it is Ian Quinn's fault. I mean, that's totally a good answer to the question, who does Ward blame? But I think there is another person that he blames. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It didn't occur to me when I was watching it.
Okay. So they have him, you know, growling. You know, it's like, I don't blame myself. They immediately then cut to Coulson standing over Skye's body, you know, kind of racked with guilt / emotion. I think that Ward and there's a rift developing between Ward and Coulson here, because Coulson definitely has changed his tactics within the last, I'm going to say, three episodes, since basically he found out what happened to him. He's almost being irresponsible, but, you know, we saw him kind of switch over and into that sort of, you know, I'm not going to hold back secrets. I'm going to tell people, you know, that I care about what's going on and, you know, be a little more open and honest and stuff like this. And I think Ward blames Coulson just due to the fact that Coulson put her into this predicament. You know, again, she has gone off on her own, and it's because of an op that Coulson was planning. That's just my thought.
Wasn't it? I may be remembering this wrong, but didn't Ward say at some point she can handle herself, or was that Coulson that said that?
Was it? I think it was Coulson that was saying that.
Now that you have kind of said all that, I think, yeah, maybe you're right.
It just, again, the way that it was shot and the way that they, you know, kind of put the scene together, that was kind of the take home that I got from it.
Are you feeling like Ward is having some sort of connection to Skye? I thought that's where they were going toward the beginning of the season, but then you have this Ward May thing.
It's inconclusive, not enough evidence. I don't know, because there's a purely physical connection at least for May, with Ward. Ward seems to have more invested in it, and it may be because he's younger and less experienced. Because when Coulson's talking to May about it in Mexico the other week, you know, he was like, you know, if this gets anybody into trouble, she's like, I know, I'll end it. You know, that's all it is. And she's, for her, it's like, it's purely sex, right? It's just that. But then this week, Ward's talking to Coulson, and, you know, he's like, you know, so this thing happened, but not here on the bus, you know, and he couldn't say it. And it's like, if it really didn't mean anything to you and it was just sex, you need to learn how to be able to say the word sex. So I feel that the emotional attachment for Ward is actually still with May more than he is willing to admit. I think he might feel responsibility for Sky just because he is her SO and supposedly training her. And, you know, we haven't been seeing much of that lately, but, I think, again, that will also be an important element in probably the next episode that we see, because all the characters probably will have to deal with Sky being in this life-threatening situation in some fashion. Simmons and Fitz, well, Simmons from a friendship, Fitz is probably the one that's more romantically involved with her. You know, he seems to be the one that's kind of got puppy dog eyes for her. Ward from a responsibility standpoint, and Coulson from a, you know, also from a responsibility standpoint, but also from a more personal standpoint, I think.
Yeah.
And May, you know, I don't know. May's a cold, hard bitch. What can I say?
She seems to be warming up to her, too, though. So maybe just because she's part of the team. And that's important to May.
Right. It is. Right. And I thought it was just because she was wearing hot leather.
It got wet there at one point, too.
Oh, yeah. That was yummy.
Speaking of May, real quick, that the scene where she was tied up and Agent Russo was torturing her there, yeah. that was pretty cool. Idiot. I just wanted to point that out real quick.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to stick a knife in her, and then I'm just going to leave this knife sticking in you as I turn my back on you. I mean, she's a SHIELD operative. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't know what that means. But that was a little, oh, my God, I can't believe he did that. And, you know, and she starts smiling, and you're like, oh, my God, this is going to end so bad for him. So, yeah, that was an interesting scene. It looked very much like the same location they used for the church in the episode with the Asgardian staff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you... I mean, I just was kind of seeing it. I'm like, oh, that kind of looks very similar, but who knows? I don't know.
So. Could be.
Scusi, attenzione, signore, signori. As we round the bend, the passengers on the north side of the train can take in the views of the famous Tre Cimi del Lavaredo. Isn't it a wonder?
I feel like I have seen these mountains before in something, but I don't know. It's a weird sense of deja vu there.
I don't know. I've been sitting on the south side of the train, so I couldn't tell.
Yeah. Okay, so Mike Peterson. Who is he? Is he Luke Cage? No. Is he so-and-so? No. He's just Mike Peterson. Oh, wait a second. We faked you out. He's Deathlok. Okay, so that was an interesting reveal, and I like the way they did that sequence. They bring him back. They put this cybernetic leg on him, which... That was a really kind of cool and creepy scene there. He goes and executes these people, and we zoom in on the leg, and it says Project Deathlok, which was all awesome, except for the fact that in a press release like 2 weeks ago, they revealed, we're turning Mike Peterson into Deathlok. I may not have even put that together until like at the, you know, 3 minutes into the whole sequence and stuff, and then the confirmation at the end would have been like a great fanboy moment, but I feel like, again, Marvel kind of ruined it for themselves by spoiling that in advance. Well, did you... I mean, I don't know. Did you have any similar thoughts about that?
See, now, not having any experience with Deathlok prior to, you know, this whole thing going down and the Marvel announcement, it wouldn't have meant as much to me. But I agree with you. Yeah, especially for people that know who the character is, mm-hmm. that would have been great. That would have been fantastic to kind of not let anybody know until that final sequence when they used their special effects budget on zooming in
right.
to his leg. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you. Although maybe, and I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate here, but maybe they didn't do it that way because Deathlok is not as well known of a character. And so maybe they were trying to kind of spread the news about it.
Yeah, the press release said he was 40 years old and an icon. He's not an icon. I mean, he's had a couple series and he cameos and a couple other things. But no, he is he's a pretty third or fourth tier sort of hero slash villain, anti-hero, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I hadn't had much experience with Deathlok, and you were lucky, or you were nice enough to share with me the first issue mm-hmm. that Deathlok appeared in, and his I guess his origins. I mean that was pretty much his
that
origin.
There have been I guess three individuals that have been Deathlok in the comics, and that was the original appearance back in 1974 from. What was it? Was it Marvel Premiere? I think was the. Oh, this is horrible. I should have. I didn't even put that in the show notes. So,
I have it here. If I can find it, I'll pull it up. It's right in front of me here.
I'm sorry. It was Astonishing Tales 25. That's what it
right.
was.
There you go.
He was also. I mean, he's been in Marvel Premiere and a couple other titles that weren't, you know, Deathlok. He also did have a Deathlok series at one point, but mostly, you know, he showed up in anthology titles like Astonishing Tales, and also like teamed up with Spider-Man in like Marvel Team Up, started with the Thing in Marvel 2-in-1 or something like that.
So in the comic, mm-hmm. he is this guy who has a bunch of cybernetic implants and a computer, I guess, embedded
right.
in him, In the issue that I read, the first issue, he struggled. But he had this debate, you know, with the computer in his head. So he was kind of making his own decisions and yet still following the computer's orders. And I kind of felt that same sort of vibe with Mike Peterson at the mm-hmm. end when Quinn told him to kill Sky.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe he had enough... knowledge. If I had never read the comic, I would have thought, well, he's just not going to kill her because he doesn't need to kill her. But
right.
But having read this comic, I think that was kind of a nod to the origins of mm-hmm. him when he acted with the computer like that. So
yeah, I agree with that. And just going back to what you said earlier about, you know, what you think their idea or what you thought their idea was with the press release, I have to agree. I think that they felt like they were slipping in some of the ratings and they wanted to negate some of the online criticism. So they said, hey, you know, we trust us. We do know what we're doing because look, this guy's going to be Deathlok pretty soon. And, you know, we've got all these other guest appearances coming up on the show. So just stay tuned. I feel if they had just postponed that and done that press release now after this episode, you know, I don't know how much, you know, they couldn't have lost that many more people. You know, within that week or that week and a half or whatever. So I felt like they could have saved that one. Hopefully there are some other surprises that they are saving that they aren't going to spoil in a press release. You know, it's like when, like, let's say you find out that there's a casting announcement for Star Wars Episode 7 and it's David Prowse and James Earl Jones are going to be in the movie. Oh my gosh, what does that mean? Well, that probably means Darth Vader is going to be back in some fashion, you know, something like that, where it just kind of completely spoils it for people that know. It's the opposite of what they were doing with Star Trek Into Darkness, where, oh no, we didn't cast him as Khan. No, he's Joe Smith, or whatever the character's name was in that. I can't even remember what that was. John Harrington Harrison. And, it's like everyone's like, what? How is this an iconic villain from Star Trek? Oh, whoa, it is. But it's not Khan. And then you know, you see the movie and it's Khan. It's like, we knew that. Why were you lying about it? Same kind of thing here. It's like, all right. So, yeah, this is obviously Deathlok because you told us it was. And then to, you know, I guess for the even for the uninitiated, or even for the initiated, I don't know that you would have figured out that he was Deathlok at that point. Some people might have had an inkling, but I mean, I don't know if it would have crossed my mind. And I've read a couple of his stories, but, you know, it's not like Iron Man or Thor or Hulk. It's not
What you're describing here, I feel, is kind of something that it's a line that a lot of people in the entertainment industry are kind of walking right now on how much to share, how little to share, how much do you keep secret. You know, you saw that with the Star Trek you mentioned. Right now, you know, J.J. Abrams doing Star Wars. We haven't heard anything about that. You know, there's right. and you know you got here in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and you know, you mentioned Arrow earlier. They keep some stuff, but they reveal just a little bit and they tease a little bit. I think maybe with the, you know, amount of communication that we have with the internet and social media these days, that's probably a really hard thing to decide. You know, how much
right.
do you use to promote your show versus how much do you use to surprise people who are already into it and excited about it.
Right.
So, in this case, I'm with you. I think they probably leaned on the wrong side, at least in my taste, though.
Right. I mean, you bring up Arrow, and, you know, it's like one example of something that is satisfying on that show is the fact that they you know, you do get teased stuff in advance. Like, we knew that there was this character on the island that is named Slade Wilson, and it's like, oh, that's the guy that plays Deathstroke. Coincidence that Deathstroke and Deathlok on this show, but that's about where the similarities end. And so we saw a guy that was dressed up in the traditional, kind of the traditional Deathstroke costume on the island that was Slade Wilson's partner, but then he got killed, and it's like, okay, that's a great homage to the character, but, you know, we know they're doing characters slightly different than they were in the comics, so it's understandable. And then all of a sudden they surprise us by bringing Slade Wilson into the present, and then a couple of episodes later he's in his full-on Deathstroke outfit and hasn't been called Deathstroke yet, but, you know, fans know what's coming with that. So it's like, we got teased with this, and we knew that this was going to happen because of the character name, and they gave us a bunch of stuff, and we're like, cool, okay, that was, for me at least, I felt that was satisfying. And I feel this Deathlok stuff is satisfying at this point, too. I'm not like, oh my God, I can't believe they did it this way. Because it was fun, it was a good way to do it. I just wish we had gotten a little more tease and a little less reveal early on. So, I don't know. We'll see where they go with this. And obviously, they are bringing... so now we've got three potential super characters that are going to come after S.H.I.E.L.D. in some fashion that we will have to use in the supervillain breakout at the beginning of Season 2, right?
Yes.
So, there was actually another... character that was teased in this episode or mentioned, not by his supervillain name, but by his human name, which is Emil Blonsky, which I thought was pretty cool, a.k.a. the Abomination from the, I guess, from Incredible Hulk, not from Hulk. Mm-hmm. So it was the, who was that, Edward Norton? Was it the Edward Norton Hulk?
That was the Edward Norton Hulk,
right,
yeah.
The second Hulk. The Tim Roth bad guy. So that was pretty cool. The fact that he was... They say that he's in cryo-freeze somewhere in... It was like...
In Alaska.
Alaska or Russia or something like that. Someplace.
I think it was Alaska. Because that's where Coulson threatened to send Ward.
Ward, okay. And then you caught... there was another reference to Asgard somewhere?
Yes.
Where was
that?
Yes.
Let's see. I put that in there, and then you sprang it on me. I wasn't. Yeah, you asked about it. I'm not in the mood for Asgard or something. And he said. I hope it's not.
Oh,
something. He's not. Wasn't in the mood for dealing with Asgard or something like that. I think Coulson said that.
Right, for whatever the secret package was. Right.
Oh, right.
because he didn't want to have another one of those kind of things. So yeah, so that's cool. So, overall, this was an enjoyable episode. I felt that this is it's the slow burn. They're moving forward a little bit more than they have in the past. The only reason I'm hesitating at all on any of this stuff is because we were off for so much. Then they showed an episode. Now we're going to be off again. So they just don't have that momentum building up, I guess. So
yeah, they lose it, and this is common among shows, especially when things like the Olympics pop up and big long winter breaks and things like that. They lose it when they have those big breaks, and for a show like this that's kind of keeps its balance on the edge, especially among ratings and audience reviews. I think it's important to keep that momentum up.
Yeah.
So they need a big long jog sprint toward the finale of the season so they can keep it up.
So this was episode 13, which means that they've got 9 episodes left, which is 9 weeks. I'm hoping that sprint you're talking about is going to be March, April, and then the first week of May. I'm hoping they go straight through to the end here when they come back.
That would be good. I would like to see that. I would really like to see that. And use all of the stuff that they have kind of kept hanging throughout the season,
mm-hmm.
or at least some of the stuff, and start throwing that in there. Start making this a little bit more, a little bit more dangerous for the team, because there's a lot of threats coming at them all at once. So yeah. It's starting to look real dark for them, and they're not we need, at some point, we need to feel like they're not going to succeed.
Right. Right.
And this did it a little bit with Sky.
This starts it, but again, you don't have the momentum. You don't have enough momentum for us to kind of, at least for me, it's not enough momentum to suspend my disbelief in that that the team is in any danger, or that characters from the team are in any danger.
Yep. So, they're getting there. So yep. We'll, just shoot a few more people and we'll be good.
So, well, I hope you guys had fun listening to us talk about it. This was an interesting episode to talk about. But that is all that we have for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure you leave us some feedback on iTunes. You can also contact us by email at shield@randomchatter.com or on Twitter at Agents Podcast. And our Facebook page is facebook.com/agentspodcast.
And also be sure to check out the other podcast that Josh and I do together called Green Justice and Arrow Podcast, which follows the TV series Arrow, and it's also available here on the Random Chatter Network. And if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell all your friends about us. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.